Welcome back. I'm Julie Glenn. This is Gulf Coast Live. Sinkholes make headlines in Florida now and again. They've been occurring for years, but it seems that every time a new one opens up, neighbors and the state as a whole is taken by surprise. Just last month, a sinkhole in Land O'Lakes, Florida, opened up and took two homes. It's grown since then to 260 feet at its widest point and now has claimed seven homes. Florida is more prone to sinkholes than any other state since its bedrock is limestone. That's a material that can be worn away over time by acidity in rain and runoff. In 2014, WGCU's Amy Tardiff talked with Robert Brinkman. He wrote the book on sinkholes entitled, appropriately enough, Florida Sinkholes. Here's an encore of that show.
To start, Bob, what is a sinkhole as compared to what is not a sinkhole?
You know, it's funny. People use the term sinkhole for basically any kind of hole that opens up on the surface of the earth. But as a geologist, we tend to define these, the natural forming sinkholes, as depressions that form underneath or on top of soluble rock. As the rock dissolves, it creates a void space underground, and that void eventually will collapse to form a depression on the surface of the earth.
And there are a couple of different kinds. We have a different kind down here in southwest Florida and the Everglades than is the kind that forms north of Lake Okeechobee, right?
Right. The kind that we tend to have north of Lake Okeechobee are the cover sinkholes that form where the limestone is covered by a thin layer of marine sands. And so the rock is not at the surface. In the Everglades, there's some very young limestone that is at the surface where the limestone is dissolving, very shallow depressions at the surface. But the big problems actually occur north of you, north of Lake Okeechobee in the Tampa and Orlando, Ocala, and even up in the Panhandle areas. Those are the main areas where we see the greatest damage in Florida.
Because the Jeffrey Bush incident in Sefner was so publicized and so frightening, can you briefly explain how prevalent such rapidly forming sinkholes are, or do we typically have fair warning?
We generally have fair warning. Generally, sinkholes form as the marine sand on top of the bedrock filters down into that void space. So it's like an hourglass kind of situation, but that hourglass might take dozens and dozens of years to create a depression at the surface very, very slowly. So in most cases, we see subtle settling, some cracked foundations. It's very rare that we get that sudden collapse sinkhole like we saw in Sefner last year.
Are there more these days, or are we just more aware of them?
You know, everybody is wondering that question, and I think it's a valid one. But I always like to go back to one of the major principles of geology, which is uniformitarianism, which means that the present is the key to the past. And if we take a look at Florida, there are hundreds of sinkhole lakes all over the state that formed over the last several thousand years. So when we recognize that we have so many depressions that formed, we have to understand that that's a continuous process that keeps going during our time here on the planet. So the kinds of depressions that we're seeing forming today certainly were forming in the past. And while human activity might trigger some of these collapses or some of these sinkhole events, odds are they would have formed anyways.
Now, being that you are up at Hofstra, you're not in Florida, what interests you so much about these things?
You know, I was at the University of South Florida for 23 years in Tampa, and I did a lot of research on sinkholes and caves and limestone features in the state. And I'm actually the chairman of the board of the National Cave and Karst Research Institute, and we work on a lot of national sinkhole and cave and karst and groundwater issues around the country. You know, about 10 to 20% of the United States is covered with this kind of landscape. Now, Florida is mainly karst, which is this landscape of limestone terrain. But if you think about what happened in Kentucky with the Corvette Museum recently, and there are some really challenging surface problems in places like Kentucky or Texas and New Mexico, and even up in the north in Pennsylvania, places like Milwaukee. All of these areas have karst issues or karst challenges because of the subsurface conditions.
Can sinkholes be predicted? Like, you know, if you want to build on land that you own or if you're going to buy a house, is there any way to tell if there's some problem underneath?
Sure. People can use geophysical tools. In Florida, we would use ground-penetrating radar. But it's really rarely done because it is a little bit expensive. It costs, you know, anywhere from $1,000 to $5,000 for an assessment. And some people just don't want to know what the answer is, too, because we take a risk in building in sinkhole-prone areas, and sometimes we just don't want to know if it's going to be a problem, especially because it's so rare to have serious injury or death from a sinkhole in Florida. Most of the time, it's property damage that we're worried about.
You mentioned before the kind of different kind of sinkholes we have in the Everglades and in our area. It was interesting to learn in your book that cypress domes are cypress trees filling sinkhole lakes. That is
right.
Very cool.
It is very cool. It's part of a natural biological succession of these lakes slowly filling in with sediment and organic matter, and eventually the trees colonize that area, and they look like high points across the landscape, but in fact they're depressions.
Are they important to the land in some way?
They are. They're recharge areas for the aquifer systems, and they provide a really unique ecosystem for the state, habitat for all kinds of animals and plants. And they're so unique in Florida that it's one of the few places in the world where we see these kinds of ecosystems emerge.
But yet they are formed on sinkholes, and we were looking around on campus the other day, and there's a cypress dome not far from where I'm sitting. Are they dangerous in any way?
No. Typically, once a sinkhole forms, they're stable. I mean, they can grow with time. I mean, there's a lot of evidence of some of the larger sinkhole lakes expanding. But where you're at, sinkholes are relatively rare in that part of the world. What happens as you head further south out of Tampa Tampa-Orlando, is that the bedrock where we see the sinkholes forming in Tampa actually dips down below the surface. And what you have in Fort Myers, Naples area, the whole southwest Florida area, is a very thick layer of sediment and very young limestone that is interbedded. And we don't typically see a lot of sinkholes forming in that area. They can happen, but they're very, very rare.
Another surprise was to find out that many of Florida's lakes are sinkholes.
Yes. Most of those circular lakes we see in Florida are sinkholes, with the exception of Lake Okeechobee. A lot of people think Lake Okeechobee is a sinkhole lake, but it's not. It formed as sediment was deposited around a big embayment. But most of the other lakes that we see in the state are sinkholes. And if you look at places like Lake County near Orlando or just north of the Everglades, there's some places where there's more lake than land in some areas. So it's a very active limestone area.
Another active area, Pinellas County, where St. Petersburg is, you call that,
right,
or it's called a sinkhole swarm. What does that mean?
A sinkhole swarm is a place where there are many, many sinkholes forming at one time. And what's interesting is that the sinkholes form as limestone dissolves. So if you think about water working at underground, slowly dissolving our limestone to create a Swiss cheese-like subsurface, and there are a number of people who have gone diving into some of these cavernous systems, people who have explored and mapped these caves. And what we know about them is that they are forming at a very rapid rate, especially near the coastal systems where freshwater and saltwater meet. And those conditions occur strikingly in parts of Pinellas County. And so there are some neighborhoods that have had numerous sinkholes forming there to cause considerable property damage within particular neighborhoods.
You also say that many sinkholes are now, they're not only lakes, but we turn them into our water retention ponds to help our neighborhoods. Is there a problem with that?
Yes, there is. You know, what's interesting is we no longer allow people to utilize sinkholes for that purpose. However, in the past, sinkholes were logical places to go ahead and put stormwater. But what we know about sinkholes is that they are directly linked to the aquifer systems that we all rely on for drinking water. So if we're putting stormwater that drains off of roadways and off of parking lots, that could go directly into our drinking water because the aquifer that supplies our drinking water is so interconnected in these cavernous systems, it just takes a few moments for that material to make its way into our well water. So we have to be careful now to try to avoid putting stormwater into those water retention ponds that are linked with sinkholes, and that's why we no longer allow that.
I guess the same problem would occur with all of those lakes, and you mentioned in your book that a lot of people throw garbage and other who knows what into dry sinkholes, and that
it's a problem. It's so interesting. I've traveled all over the country and looked at sinkhole issues, and one of the things you see often is that sinkholes are because they're such low areas in the landscape, they're one of the first places that people think of for dumping garbage. And you see that a number of organizations have worked very hard over the last several decades to try to clean these areas up. You know, the cave community is very active around the country, volunteer cave groups called grottos. And they're part of the National Speleological Society and these volunteers go out and try to do cleanups of sinkholes and caves to try to reduce the problem with pollution and litter in these areas to try to protect our groundwater systems.
We're talking to Dr. Bob Brinkman of Hofstra University, who's out with a new book on Florida sinkholes. Have you ever encountered one? Well, join our conversation or ask him a question. The number is 1-877-428-8255. That's 1-877-GCU-TALK. Or comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. What have people done to cause sinkholes?
Ah, great question.
Because it's not only natural, is it?
No. Like I said earlier, most of the time the void space underground would have created a sinkhole anyways. But what we do as humans is we can induce them to form rapidly. And we've done that in some circumstances. Some of the more famous cases of induced sinkholes are the stories that come out of some of the agricultural lands where farmers have pumped tremendous amounts of water out of the subsurface for irrigation or for protection of crops from freezing. This is particularly common in the strawberry fields that are east of Tampa. And as the water is removed from the aquifers, there's a rapid drawdown in the water table, and it leaves these void spaces without any fluids in them, and there can be sudden collapses at that time.
One of the best examples of how governments have become involved in sinkhole regulations is the state's definition of a sinkhole for insurance purposes. How do they define a sinkhole?
It's interesting. Florida has been in the sinkhole regulation game for quite some time. But there are really two approaches that are taken around the country in states or in local governments where there are sinkhole issues. One is a regulation prior to building, and this is where we do setbacks from known sinkholes or require some degree of site assessment. We don't do that in Florida. Our protections come after the building, and for years we have required sinkhole insurance for property owners. But the laws have been relatively unstable. What I mean by that is they've been changing considerably over the last few decades. You know, we've seen hurricanes come through the state, and we've seen changes in the insurance policies. A lot of people have difficulty getting private insurance, and so they rely on the state insurance, the citizens insurance in Florida. And the same thing is true with sinkhole coverage, is that a lot of it's difficult to get coverage for sinkhole. You're covered by for catastrophic collapse, a sudden collapse for the house, where everybody is covered for that. But we're not covered for subtle sinkhole damage, from unless you can get a rider, a special insurance rider for your coverage. But it's very difficult to get. A lot of people have had had a hard time trying to get that kind of insurance coverage in these sinkhole prone areas. So the result is that the consumers or the homeowners are much more vulnerable to the impacts of sinkholes on their property now.
Has that come up in the legislature recently? I don't think I heard about it this year.
It hasn't come up in the last year, but in the past there was a required sinkhole coverage for everyone, for all kinds of sinkholes, where the sinkholes were defined as either a surface expression or subsurface evidence of that filtering of sand down into a void space. And that definition caused a great deal of difficulty, because people were trying to, on either side of the issue, were trying to prove or disprove this idea that there was filtering of sand or sediment into a subsurface void. So there were a number of legal cases, and the emergence of what I call a sinkhole industrial complex across the state of Florida that involves consulting firms and geologists and lawyers. And I don't want to say anything bad about those industries. They're completely useful industries and are incredibly helpful to homeowners who have had some damage. So I'm not disparaging that group, but the vagueness of the law has created this need for legal advice and geotechnical advice for homeowners.
So are claims more often denied than paid?
Well, what we're seeing is that there are millions and millions of dollars paid to homeowners every year as a result of sinkhole claims. So I don't have the statistics on how many claims are accepted and denied, but I do know that that it's harder to get insurance than it was a few years ago, and that. That is causing some difficulty for homeowners right now.
Can you actually fix a house after it's been damaged by a sinkhole and fix, the ground underneath to be sure that you should live there and you're safe?
Yes. Actually, it's done with great success. One of the amazing advances over the last 20, 30 years or so is that the engineering community has really worked hard to figure out how to stabilize properties. For many years, the Florida Sinkhole Institute and now the National Cave and Karst Research Institute, which I'm on the board of, that group is now taking on the role of having semi-regular sinkhole meetings to talk about this. And the engineering community is very active with sinkhole remediation and protection. One of the ways that's typically done is that once the void space is mapped and understood, you can pour a mix of sand and concrete into the subsurface to try to stabilize the home. And in some cases, supports can be put in place to shore up a property. And that has worked very well in some communities. It's, of course, expensive. But if it's a matter of whether or not you want to protect the home or not is what matters in some cases.
We're talking about Florida sinkholes today. That's the title of Hofstra University professor Dr. Bob Brinkman's new book. Our phone number is 1-877-GCU-TALK, or you can comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media, or email us at gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Now, you talk about this research aspect a lot. I can tell that it's something very close to your heart. The UCF Florida Sinkhole Research Institute existed in the 1980s and 90s when it was defunded. And now there's a lack of coordination of research, even though there is still research going on at various Florida universities. Has that hurt the situation?
You know, I think it has. What's happened over the last several years is that there's not been a single leading organization in the state saying that they were going to lead the way on sinkhole research. And certainly the Florida Geological Survey has done a good job in collecting data and managing sinkhole information, and they just recently got a grant to do some sinkhole vulnerability research. But generally, there's not been a strong voice on science and policy issues in karst. University of South Florida has a number of excellent karst researchers, as does University of Florida and Florida State. But at the same time, we don't have a sinkhole research institute in the state. And in fact, that group used to manage the sinkhole conferences, and now it's managed by the National Cave and Karst Research Institute, which is based out of Carlsbad, New Mexico. And they have sinkhole problems there, but I'm not sure that was the intent to have that research effort move out of Florida to New Mexico. I mean, I'm glad that it's still going on, but there's not a strong voice for sinkhole science and policy in the state.
Is there any place people can go to, you know, look online and say, are there sinkholes all around my neighborhood?
The Florida Geological Survey, and again, I'm not trying to disparage that group, they do an amazing job with sinkhole research, and they have a number of really good resources on their website. So if people would search for Florida Geological Survey sinkhole, they'll find a great deal of information.
And that is all the time we have. Thank you so much, Bob.
You bet. It was my pleasure speaking with you this morning.
That was an encore of Amy Tardiff's interview with Dr. Bob Brinkman, who wrote the book Florida Sinkholes. Our show today was produced by Matthew Smith. Our director is Richard Chin Kui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers, 90.1. WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.